Video, welcome back. Just as Drew's just wandered off, probably making a cup of tea. I already got mine prepared in advance, well ahead. I hope the audio levels are all right. I think they're all right.
Yeah, no way for me to know, really. You sound
No,
fine.
I think so. They're kind of like vaguely the same. So
Cool.
there we go. I gotta be honest, this isn't going to be the most exciting thing to say because, like, you know what exactly has been drilled into my mind over the past like week or so about YouTube and like how I never seem to be able to like get it out of my mind. And I know this, it probably irritates everyone, but I have this call to like, I don't know, like, I don't know what, like, delete the channel or someone left a comment that says, like, Chris, you're worried about the algorithm too much. Creators in general worry about the algorithm too much. It's like, it's right. But I'm not, I don't care. Like, I mean, but I'm drawn, like, but it's there. It's living rent free in my head, even though it's like, I don't want to care. I don't care. I think I don't
Yeah,
care.
I mean, the worrying about the algorithm too much. Yeah, on the one hand, you can just make the YouTube channel you want to make and get the viewers you get. But I think being aware that if you're not doing particular things, it's more of an uphill battle. I
I
think
don't.
you being aware of that, I think, is just, yes, you can just ignore that, but we're humans. We think about these things. Like, just the idea that tons of people who potentially could enjoy what you're doing are not going to see it because it's not of a particular sort or whatever.
I mean, the thing is, like, I mean,
Not about, to be clear, it's not about the number. It's not like you're chasing the numbers.
if
That's
I was
not
chasing numbers, I'd just be doing distro reviews all the time. But I've been on Arch now forever. Not forever, like, what, a year or something? What, same install, one install, same install. It's good. Was on Debian
I think more
stable
than
before that. Would happily go
him.
back if necessary, but Arch is fine. Thing I like about Arch
Well,
being re is that, like,
I think
Arch
we're at a
is.
point where Linux and distros are mature to the point where, like, on, like, I've got my preferences. I prefer Arch, but you could probably take any of the major distros, stick it on my computer, and if I had to live with it, I'd live with it. It's not that big a deal.
It's
I'd be
not that
fine.
big a deal. De Debian is an Arch, like, the two poles of the Linux, not necessarily even the Linux philosophy per se, but, like, one does a lot of what the other doesn't, and vice versa, right? So, like, Debian is slow and steady. Arch is a bit more up to date. Debian has, like a long release cycle. Debian has a long release cycle. Arch is just constantly, basically one distro all the way through. There are some nuances with how.
I do kind of feel like we went through, it's always been a joke how many Linux distros there are. It's fine that there are thousands of Linux distros, but we're at the point now where we could probably get by with just, us desktop users, we could get by with just Debian and Arch. Regardless of what your needs are, one of those two will cover it.
And then I guess maybe Mint if you want something that is literally a bit more, I won't say, like, user friendly, or, like, you could just stick it on,
I sort of think of Mint as, like, it's fundamentally Debian, but it's set up for you.
Basically.
Basically, I know it's based on Ubuntu. I know there's a Debian edition, but yeah, fundamentally, it's Debian.
It still irks me that they're basing on Debian, despite the basing on Ubuntu, despite having fun many disagreements with how Ubuntu's put together. And they seem like they're reverse engineering a lot of Ubuntu to make it more like Debian, whilst they've got a Debian base ready to go.
I don't understand. Yeah, because they did the Debian thing, LMDE, years ago. Like, years ago. I remember when it was first a thing, and I gave it a pop, and I was like, seemed as good as normal Mint. I assume they're going to transition to this within a year or so. And however many, it's like decade plus later now. It's definitely more than a decade plus later. And they're still, I don't know why they haven't just, switched to that. I don't know. I don't know. Because, like you say, they do, increasingly they're fighting against what Ubuntu is doing when Debian isn't doing those things. I don't know why. I assume there's a good reason for it.
Yeah,
Probably
I
isn't.
assume there's a good reason to habit, maybe, or
It might just be more work than we realize too.
Well, I'm assuming that's probably it, really, to be honest. Assuming that's
Maybe just
probably
the
it.
up-to-dateness.
Oh, also, one second, just before we crack on, I want to change my lighting. I've just realized my lighting is a bit shit. That's the fucking bores of doing video, isn't it? Like, it's a medium day outside. Oh, I'm. You know what? I live with the overexposed. It's at least I get to look out of a window. Or maybe it will. I don't know how. See, I do actually kind of like the podcasty thing, but why is it like this fucking monkey on my back that I can't seem to shake? Like, can I, like, I'd like to, maybe I just upload
it. Let's get into it. Let's psychoanalyze it. I mean, you said you think it's irritating for everybody. I don't think it is. I think it's amusing and charming. At times irritating when it's very rapid, but that's, broadly it's old Chris is being Chris
again. I know,
and there are comments like every time you're like, I'm leaving YouTube behind, no more YouTube videos, and somebody will go like, yeah, till next month.
I know, and they'll be right every single fucking time. See, okay, so one of the ideas, so
what is it, what's the root, what keeps drawing you back?
Part of it is that I've put so much time into it. Like, I feel like I've been building something for over a decade. And turning you back on that, forget the numbers, forget the algorithm, forget all of everything else. That is part of the root of it. Like, I feel like I'd be killing off a part of myself if I actually deleted the channel.
And a body, it's a body of work, isn't it? It's a body of work that...
It's a body of work.
It exists as work and also represents you changing over time as well.
Yeah. But also, I had this thought about taking all my videos, converting them to MP3 and then sticking them on my audio blog, my voice notes thing on my website. Yeah, it wouldn't necessarily be such a neat translation. Some of the videos require the video element. A lot of them don't, but also a lot of them are just out of date. I did a Gemini tutorial with a gate. That's completely out of date now. It's a lot easier to get up and running. All those distro reviews, you know, it's hours and hours and hours of stuff that just isn't relevant anymore. No one's really going to listen to it.
I bet there's a few people who just love watching old distro. I mentioned, like, there's a very old Linux podcast that I still listen to, like, from the beginning and listen through. I find something relaxing about that. So it's, yeah. The agate thing, yeah, that was more of a tutorial. So that is arguably, you know.
Yeah. And that, to be honest, and that's not really here nor there, to be honest, because it's a tutorial. I think I prefer doing tutorials on by text as well, because I like to follow them by text, and you can change them a little bit here and there. Sometimes if it's like a piece of software, like I learned GNU Cache through some tutorials, and that was really good because it's a visual piece of software. It works, you know. But like, yeah, working through GNU Cache, I don't know. Yeah, I suppose it depends on the software determines whether or not I find
the level of understanding of it.
But also, part of me like is irritated by my own indecisiveness on this, and I kind of like, if I killed the channel, it would be free. Like, all those brain cycles.
I do think a huge part of this is not really about YouTube nor really your relationship about YouTube. It's like, to me, it seems like a huge portion of this is you just enjoy change
a little bit.
You don't like once you like finding a thing that works and working on that to the point where it's, you know, it's honed and it's perfected, and then it's like, what next? You don't just want to trundle along with that. You want a new project, a new thing, and it's part and yeah, with the sort of, not the right word, but the dichotomy of, you know, PeerTube versus YouTube, it's like you'll go on one, feel comfortable, and then, you know, itchy feet, try YouTube again. You know, it's a desire for change more than necessarily something specific to YouTube is what it feels like.
Yeah, also, one thing I did consider is just like using YouTube as just a repository for it. Like, I just put on whatever I put, you know, maybe live stream VODs or Freebooters podcasts or whatever I'm putting up on PeerTube, all that kind of stuff. But then it just feels like it takes away from me doing it for PeerTube or doing it on Owncast or you know.
Yeah, because there is, I mean that's sort of part of the problem, is there's an ethical component to this.
Yeah.
And once you take an ethical stance, then you make it, well, I mean, the ethical is doing more peer, you know, backing away from the corporations, essentially.
Yeah.
So then any movement back towards the corporations is not only... just, it's not just change for change's sake, it's almost like a betrayal of the ethics that you've said that you are adhering to.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it is that, it isn't that, but
no, it's a little bit that. Yeah. Like,
that's not your motivation, is what I mean.
I mean, ethics is a strange word, because like, it's more to do, like, it's more like a fuck you to big tech. You know, like,
yeah,
sure, we talk about it in terms of software ethics, but also it feels a little bit like, I don't want the stuff that I do, I don't want to even call it work. Cause I don't think it's work. It's more fun and leisure and
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to hand that over to YouTube. I'm not going to say, oh, it's going to, because the chances of it like disappearing tomorrow or it being an unsafe platform, I don't think are necessarily applicable. Conversely, sometimes I think, oh, well, no, and not seriously, but I'm like, well, if I wanted to do some other change, what about TikTok? I can make videos on the computer for TikTok. I'm not a big TikTok. Well, no, I don't. I'm not on TikTok at all.
I mean, you did go in that direction once, didn't you? You started doing
Once,
some
yes.
TikToks, and they were fun. They were fun. But I think I think it's a case of, okay, I've done that. What next? More than anything else.
The interesting thing with TikTok is, and people say differently about this, but when I was you doing TikTok videos, it felt like you could be a bit more experimental, or you could, if you, or if you, yeah, it felt like easier to just get into the,
I think at that time TikTok was doing a better. YouTube very much shows you more of what you expect. Whereas TikTok, I think more possibly because the short form makes this easier, but will show you stuff you wouldn't, unusual stuff, weird stuff.
It's got a better algorithm, I guess.
Well, they're different, and I
A
don't know
different,
about that, but
different algorithm.
YouTube's. We all hate YouTube. We all hate Google. As a company, as a concept, as a way of running things, but YouTube as a service, I fucking love it, and I've really tuned my recommendations. Like I spend a lot of effort, removing things. They don't show me this, not this kind of thing. Ignore. And my YouTube recommendations are very good and show me the kinds of things that I want to watch. So it's a very good platform from a user point of view in certain ways, but at the same time, I fucking hate it, and I wish it was.
And
I
then you were talking the other day about how like RSS is kind of making a bit of a comeback, and I use RSS regularly on my phone. It's much better to like if I want something to read, it's there. There's long form stuff. By sometimes people I know, sometimes it's magazines, sometimes it's newspapers. Heck, you can even follow council, election updates on RSS. You can follow everything on RSS.
I think people are not like en masse, but I do think there's a slow, steady building movement of just normal people not coming it from, a software politics or ethical, just not enjoying the algorithmic experience and seeking to escape from it and realizing that RSS is one of the avenues for doing that.
And again,
I mean,
like,
I've never been an RSS user. I've always been somebody who sort of wanted to use it, but it didn't really fit how I worked. But have I mentioned this on Freebooters before?
I think
I
so.
replaced my home
Other,
page
yeah,
with
yeah.
essentially a curated RSS feed of stuff that I'm interested in, including some YouTube stuff. And the effect of that is I'm reading more interesting stuff. It's friend. It's a mix of podcasts I like, some politicsy stuff, friends' websites and blogs, and a bit of YouTube stuff. But I'm reading more. I'm reading more blog posts, which is good. And I'm engaging with YouTube in a bit more of a considered way, I think, because of it.
I see, the thing is also with YouTube is that a lot of people I know aren't making videos for YouTube anymore anyway. Other people feel I feel have moved on. I think that's part of it. Like, I for some reason can't leave well enough alone. Like, I can't just be like, okay, I've done YouTube, that's over in the corner. Why do I have to feel the need to kill it?
Yeah, I think you and I think you I was on dial-up for a very long time. I was on dial-up well into when people had like beyond like the 2 meg broadband came along, and then the faster broadbands. Well into the like faster broadband era, I was still on dial-up, and YouTube did not work on dial-up. So I came to YouTube very late. I think you had you were a user of like old YouTube, like you remember the old original YouTubes and stuff. I don't. For me, part of what I enjoy about YouTube, I don't care about the longevity of channels and stuff. I kind of like the churn. I kind of like having a fascination. Like there's a channel I found that one I mentioned to you mentioned it on Freebies actually the Botanist Dude, the working class Italian American Botanist Dude. I'll binge him for a week and then probably not go back for a few months. And then I found this American dude in Ohio, very sort of like working class normal in his 50s. American dude who just eats British food. You know, the one he just it's one of those Americans eats British food dudes. But he's so He's very not YouTube-y, very down to earth, very just trying hobnobs, loving them, you know, sharing hobnobs with his friends and stuff. So the point is, like, I don't mind the churn. I don't mind finding new channels, old channels fall by the wayside, find new stuff. I mean, that's not all I watch. I watch a lot of politics. Politics is my mainstay on politics and board games is my mainstay on YouTube. But...
Yeah, yeah. What is my mainstay? What is it? I'm going to just have a look at, like, a lot of it's video games, actually. I watch a lot of video game stuff.
I used to. I find video game content unpleasant now for some reason. I don't know. It's not that it's changed or anything. It's more I've changed.
Yeah, it's video game. A little bit of politics. Mostly there's some video game stuff. There's some, like, bigger channels. A couple of podcasts. There's the occasional smaller channel here. But most of what I'm watching... Actually, most of what I'm looking at here... And I don't know if this is a volume question because it's subscribers, is that, like, smaller channels will put out a video, I don't know, a couple of times a year or a few times, you know, once a month or something. But a lot of my subscription feed is people that are churning out, near daily videos and stuff like that, who are, like, you know, professionals.
Any channel that I've been subscribed to that went that way, I've just had to unsubscribe. I can't watch that much of anything, really. It's too much. It's overwhelming. For me, that certain channels I'm okay with weekly if it's something I'm really into, but generally I don't want a pace faster than once a month.
That's a very slow pace.
Because I've got multiple things, you know. I want a bit of, you know, it's a bit, you know, a bit of this, bit of that, bit of variety during the month, and then
there's a couple of, there's a cooking channel there I like, but only the one cooking channel. Like, I'm not into cooking channels.
I have a lot like that. I have a lot where it's one channel doing a particular thing and they just do it in a way that clicks with me. I've gone, maybe I like cooking channels, and you watch some others and you're like, no, I don't like cooking channels, I just like this one.
There's a lot of there's a fair amount of that to be fair. It's Barry Lewis, he lives in Bath,
and that's the great, not, I don't, oh, no, mean Bristol, this is peculiar to YouTube, Bristol. But that's something that's great about YouTube, I think, is just the TV could never do that, just somebody doing a particular thing in a way that clicks for you.
Speedrunners. I like speedrunners as well.
Like speedrunners, don't you? Yeah.
Why? And also particularly non-glitchy speed, like no glitch speedrunners.
No, very much. I enjoy those, and I'll watch like a couple a year, maybe. But
I will watch.
Another one of mine. I've said it before. New American local news bloopers.
They're great, aren't they?
Because hours.
We don't have news in that way in the UK, do we?
Well, we don't have, like, they still have, it's an odd thing for America to still have, but they still have very localized, I think, news channels. And I keep thinking while watching them that it feels like almost a perfect job for me.
Yeah.
Like being on American local news, because nobody's fucking watching.
Yeah.
Like, they've got reasonable budgets, like, the production quality is quite good. Like, you've got a creative job, you know, working in media, which I probably would be something I would enjoy. But it's not capitalist, because it's not functioning in a capitalist market kind of thing. It's just a public service, and the stakes are really fucking low.
Yeah,
so everybody's like really relaxed about it, and that just seems kind of idyllic to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we do with Owncast in a little bit of a way.
Yeah.
See, now Owncast is, like, to me, I feel like that is the one that's up my street the most. Like, live streaming, it felt a little bit more to me, like a little bit in line with what I like to do over something, even video, because I like the chitty chattiness of it. Like you say, a lot of it is the low stakes, it's almost like what I make. I prefer to be background noise than the main event. Talk radio would be my Terry Wogan in the morning kind of thing. Like, I. God rest his soul. Massive dick, apparently.
Horrible.
No. He has a massive dick.
He had a massive dick. Oh no, I just found it. It seemed very conservative to me in a British politics sense.
I don't know. No, I mean, all I know about it.
I never had that. Well, I know a lot of people have a sort of warm, feeling. I didn't. There were others of that era that I did, but. Yeah, no, not with Terry White. Also, get to the fucking point, man.
Oh my God,
He won.
no. Like, you get, like, look at, like,
Yeah, but no,
I feel
you
called
can act.
out.
For me, no, for me, it's pick one. You can either talk slowly or not
Yeah.
get to the point. You talk quiet, quick, and meander, but you're saying stuff. Whereas he'll just talk incredibly slowly and not get to, I'm literally falling asleep between words.
Well, that's kind of his thing, isn't it?
I know, I just don't enjoy
I
his
mean,
thing.
when it comes to like National Treasure Irish people,
Isn't he proper Irish, though?
is he proper Irish? Well, it says here on
Is he Irish
Wikipedia he's an
the way
Irish
that.
and radio television broadcaster, worked in the BBC.
But is he Irish like Sean Connery's Scottish?
Is Sean Connery not Scottish?
Well, it's yeah. One, like loves talking about being. Well, is he alive? He's probably dead now. Is Sean Connery alive? I've got to fuck. I assume he's dead.
I don't know,
Fuck yeah!
actually.
I assume he's dead. He must be dead. He'd be like 10 billion years old if he was alive.
Yeah, but he's got the misogyny to sustain him. No, he died.
Love talking.
Oh, died in 2020, though.
Oh, don't have, Jesus. Okay, but yeah, no. Loves talking about being Scottish. Lives in America.
Oh,
Doesn't
is that
seem
like
to do
Nigel
much.
Farage? He loves talking
That
about being British, but is in Spain, lives in Spain, like.
yeah. I don't want that to get too, like that's not. Again, always have to caveat. Like it's not about him. If a Pakistani fella comes to live here, he's British.
He can go on the radio
That's
too.
cool. Got whatever radio like, but yeah, no, but sort of capitalizing on this identity of being something while not really engaging with it or in any way helping that place or things just seems always a bit. I might be right. That might not be how Scottish people. Hamish, is that how Scottish people think of Sean Connery, or are you sort of proud of him or what?
I don't think I don't Scottish people are not proud of Sean. Hamish would not be proud of Sean Connery.
Don't think he would, but you never know with
No,
anything. It's a
Hamish,
weird.
who will be watching this probably on PeerTube, let us know your thoughts on Sean Connery. Probably involved the word dick weasel, I'd imagine.
I think that is a British trait, though, is we don't like people who get successful and go away, go to the place, the bigger place, like Hollywood or whatever. We don't like that.
I mean, Anthony Hopkins, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Marina and the
Yeah,
Diamonds. Well, Marina and the
I
Diamonds kept her Welsh heritage, and I wouldn't necessarily say she's gone Hollywood, actually.
don't know who that is.
Oh, she's lovely. Singer.
Yeah, no, I
Very
don't.
pretty.
Anthony Hopkins, I just find deeply irritating. He is one of those. It happens a lot with British people. He is an appalling actor that Americans think is an amazing actor just because he's British. He's
Are you going to
an
say that about
explosion of
Patrick
acting.
Stewart, too?
Yes, Patrick Stewart is. He's a deeply mediocre actor. He's very good at doing like the Shakespearean, like oratorical, like giving a speech kind of thing. Very good at that.
Jean-Luc
Anything else?
Picard.
Poor.
I
Yeah.
mean, Jean-Luc Picard is like a Shakespearean character in a way, isn't he?
Well, they lean into that because that's his
Yeah.
skill. But in the episode, there's an episode where he's pretending to be a smuggler,
All
and
right.
I don't like to use the word cringe, but it's cringe. He's
Yeah,
not.
hang
I
on a
don't.
minute though.
It's
If
not a
he
good.
is Jean-Luc Picard trying to be a smuggler, then he's not acting being a smuggler. He's acting
No,
someone
he's
acting
not
being.
doing. No, he's not doing. No, he's not doing that well either. He's not doing that well. And I forget her name. Oh, Kate Mulgrew, who plays Captain Janeway in Voyager.
Oh yeah.
Like if in terms of like acting range, skill, like whatever, Picard's like here. Janeway's like up in the fucking stratosphere. She's an amazing actor. And Sisko, very idiosyncratic actor. But again, I think far better performer than yeah. Anyway, that's just British actors just are overrated. I'm not saying there are no good British actors, but Americans just love it. Just they just hear the British accent and the Shakespearean, manner of delivery, which is very mannered, a mannered style of acting, and I think they just respond to that.
Yeah. Do you know, looking at Terry Wogan's Wikipedia page, I'm not seeing any politics whatsoever. And I think.
I mean, he is Alan Partridge. Like Alan Partridge is 90% based on Terry Wogan, right?
I think
I
more of
don't
a
know.
Richard Madeley or a Piers Morgan. I mean, you could blend all these people.
I think you're right that they're similar, but they came after Alan Partridge. I think in terms of what it was actually based on, I think there's a lot of Wogan in there.
Well, you're talking like early Partridge. Later Partridge,
Partridge is a character. Yeah.
because he does like Partridge picks up politics, the reactionary a British, sort of centre-right kind of macho politics a little bit, like what Piers Morgan and Madley sometimes try and do. But that's more of an evolution of his character rather than the old Partridge is definitely like Alan Titchmarsh and Terry
It's Marsh and
Wogan.
Wogan.
But I think
Yeah.
the thing is with Wogan is that it seems to me, just looking at his Wikipedia page, that he has made a substantial effort through his career that to not be a political figure of any kind.
Which in itself is a bit dodgy, I think. If you don't pick a side, you're on the side of the status quo.
Well, he was the status quo, isn't he? Like he is.
Exactly. He is the status quo.
He is the. He is. Yeah. He is. Yeah. Like that's
Get his
kind of it.
point. It's neutralish, but yeah, I think for me, it's just a little bit of personal distaste with Wogan. I didn't enjoy Wogan on a.
Yeah. No.
My
I
dad
mean.
didn't either.
Okay. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not a big Wogan fan as well. Like, I'm relatively indifferent to him. I think, like, when it comes to Irish national treasures, Graham Norton 10 times better.
Yes, and better at presenting Eurovision. Wogan's Eurovision, just the
Yeah.
sneering, like, I did not like that at all.
No. Yeah, no. We upgraded to Graham Norton, and I appreciate that as
Yeah,
well.
Graham Norton is and Graham. I'm not a person who watches a lot of celebrity interviews, but when I do, Graham Norton celebrity interviews again are up in the stratosphere compared to anybody else. He is an amazing interviewer.
And he's good on RuPaul's Drag Race as a British judge.
Not an enjoyer of the drag race, but I'm sure.
I thoroughly enjoy it. Watching through the current season 18 now,
18.
season 18 of the American one. Yeah,
Isn't it just the same every time? Isn't it
yes,
one of
yes it
those
is. Yeah, it is
shows?
aggressively the same. Aggressively the
Okay.
same.
Media update. I've just made my way through the entirety for the first time. I've watched portions before, but I've made it through the entirety of Big Bang Theory.
Why?
I find it very relaxing. When I'm in a particularly anxious phase, it's very relaxing. But again, I think it's a low stakes thing. It's very low stakes to watch. But I've come out of it with quite a positive attitude towards it. I mean, I've said before. I think I've said before. I've definitely said before on Freebooters. I don't think it's as bad as its detractors would make out. It's for me. It's on the same level as Friends. It's just the sitcom du jour of its time.
No,
But something that's
I'm not
notable about
defending Friends as well. Friends is like, shall we say, the baseline. Big
it.
Bang Theory below the baseline.
No, I think it's bang on the baseline. I think it's just sitcom du jour. But two notable things about it. The aspect of the show that fails the most and fails constantly is the comedy.
Yeah, but that's
It's
why they put
very,
the canned
very.
laughter in, so you know when the jokes are happening.
And sometimes sometimes I'm literally just like, what are they laughing at? But yeah, the comedy, it makes me laugh at times, but the comedy generally isn't of very high quality. The interpersonal stuff is far more enjoyable. But something that I found interesting, like most sitcoms, I think that like most sitcoms start bad, they find their feet, they get really good, and then they decline slowly over time.
Okay, yeah.
Big Bang Theory is a perfect straight line. It never goes up or down in quality at any point. It's straight down the middle from start to finish.
Really? Because I remember there being nerdier jokes in season one, and then they kind of ease off them a little
Not,
bit.
yeah, some, not really, no, not really, because the nerdy jokes are always a bit. It's the very pop culture idea or modern pop culture idea of what a nerd is. Like a nerd is somebody who likes conspicuous consumerism
Yeah.
of corporate properties and science and comic books and everything that it's not like you've got one nerd who's into this and one nerd who's into that. They're all into everything that a nerd is supposed to be into, which is silly.
Yeah, crazy. It's an offensive stereotype, let's be honest. I'm offended. I'm writing a letter. Points of dear po Derry
The
Terry
thing
Wogan points of view.
is, it's YouTube nerd channels. The kind of channels that'll talk about, Star Wars and Disney shit and just like all the media corporate nerd stuff that nerd, because nerd isn't what it used to be. Nerd now is it's a consumer stance. It's not anything
It's
else.
a yeah. It's a advertising category that they
Yeah.
It's a checkbox or a drop down on a target, on Google AdWords
It's
or whatever.
something because it's been mainstream. It's something that like politicians even have to do performatively. They have to do performative nerdery. I think Hamilton was a big part of this. It was a way to be performatively nerdy to because there's something that like being nerdy, I think is a modern equivalent. Not that the other one's gone away, but it's like, could you have a beer with him? You know what I mean? In American politics, it'd always be like you want to be the kind of person that voters could have a beer with. And like somebody who's like nerdy, like Hamilton, nerdy about Hamilton, like all your twatish fucking cunt friends are about that piece of shit. There's something appealing to that about that to some people.
Does that still stand?
Not as much. I think that peaked around about the time of like Hillary's campaign. I think
Pokemon
there's
Go,
a,
go to the polls. I liked her after she said that. That was so that is fucking horseshoe theory of cringe, that is.
Horseshoe theory of cringe.
That's
I do
yeah.
know
She
it, yeah. Yeah, I
genuinely
do
just
know
sounded like someone's mum trying to be cool. It's like, and I
it.
kind of had a moment for her there,
I know what you mean. I know exactly. It didn't quite cross the horseshoe for me. It was pure fucking cringe for me, but I know exactly what you
It
mean. Yeah,
humanized
yeah.
her a little bit,
Yeah, yeah.
and
Yeah.
I honestly, I think, to be honest, and you're gonna obviously like lambast me for this, but I think if Hillary Clinton was a little bit more herself and would just like fuck it, I'll just be myself. I
I don't
think.
know. I don't know. I don't. I think she's such a political animal that I don't think there is a self under that. I think if you scratch the surface, just black tar just oozes out. I don't think
Maybe.
there's any humanity in there anymore.
She was in the game for a long time.
All the people, and I've checked with our lawyers, and this is okay to say. All the people that those the Clintons murdered, and all of her husband's rapes that she covered up. I think it just rots the soul.
Well, we'll never know. We'll never know. I mean, to be honest, not to get too political, she got 3 million votes more than Trump in 2016. Like, the way that they count the votes is ridiculous to me. Why can't it just be a straight up popular vote?
I mean, it's the same here. It's just the same. You can very easily get the same situation here when things are divided up into constituencies. That's the way it goes. That's what elections are. That's the system.
Yeah,
It's
but the
not.
reason, I think the reason that there are like, look, there's a history there, about it being very important that states do their own voting thing, because apparently that's like some, it's a what you call it, like an artifact of power or something, like
It's a
where,
federal, yeah. It's a federal, yeah. It's
But
state
there's
power
nothing to
stuff.
say that they can't do their own votes and then just like, tally them up and be like, okay, candidate one gets this many votes, candidate two gets this many votes, three, four, they get the, and then they all just, add
I think
up
some states,
total.
do it proportionally, don't they? I think
I think
it's
Maine has.
because it's even complicated above that compared to our system with the Electoral College as well. What it comes down to is how many electors. I think some states, in terms of electoral electors they send to the Electoral College, some states are winner takes all. So if there's seven electors and you get 51%, you get all of those electors. And I think some states apportion the electors proportionately.
Yeah, some states do. I think is Maine one, or did Maine try
I
and
don't
do
remember
one?
which.
But then again, like this should make the system easier to change, because can't you just instruct the Electoral College to vote on the popular vote rather than vote in the way that their state voted?
Yeah, because there's also nothing legally binding electors to elect what the states told them to. When you do get what they call unfaithful electors, I think, or faithless electors, yeah, who vote contrary to what they're supposed to based on their states. It's a stupid fucking system. It's rife for fucking corruption.
I'm surprised Trump hasn't gone after the college, or did he have a plan for that and it never needed to come to it?
I believe the. Oh, I don't know what body, but somebody in the states choose who the electors are. Like the electors aren't a set group of people who you capture. The electors are chosen. I think that might be wrong, but I think it works like that. So you'd have to, yeah, I think that'd be very complicated to capture.
Yeah, I don't know. Like it just kind of baffles me. Like it wasn't. I mean, the system just didn't work in that 2016 election. It just didn't work.
But in what way?
The most people did not get the candidate that they wanted.
Well, that's not. I mean, it's more often not the case. But I mean, elections in America are increasingly very close. It's going to happen more. It's happened. I mean, it has happened before. There's been prior instances of the person who got the popular vote didn't win. Like, it's not uncommon.
Yeah, I mean, did Trump get the popular vote this time around? I actually, it was closer, but what year was it? It's 2024.
Oh, you mean the last
year? Yeah.
2024, yeah.
What year is it? Right. I want to know what the fuck, because I know that it was getting closer and closer and closer after the election had already been called. The electoral vote, states, percentage, popular vote. Oh, the popular vote. No, Trump came out with the popular vote, but it was fucking tiny. 77.
That's the way it is at the moment. I can't see it for quite a while. If things just trundle on as they are in America, I can't see that changing. I think it's just, I mean, even historically, most elections are very fucking close in America because it's a two-party system and the two parties are virtually the same.
or they reinforce each other. I would say more like they, you know.
I would say both are true in different ways, I would say. But yeah, that's a fair counter.
Like, I mean, I would infinitely rather a Democrat than a Republican any day of the week. Even as similar as they can be or whatever, like...
Something interesting to me. Me and Andrew the other day were looking at historical presidential approval ratings over the course of their presidency.
Mm.
And the absolute vast majority, I mean, some of them start fairly high.
Mm.
The range for this when they come into office is between 50 and 70.
Okay, approval. Yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
And then just over the course of the presidency, virtually without exception, they just drift down and end up somewhere between 30 and 40 at the end of it.
Yeah.
Virtually every single president, that's the pattern.
Yeah.
The only one that I could find, I didn't go all the way back, but like the only one that I could find, and I was going back to like Reagan and Ford and Nixon. Mm-hmm. So I was going back a fair way. The only one that bucks that trend, Clinton.
Okay.
Start, I can't remember exactly, but he starts somewhere around 50. I think he ends up slightly higher than that. Like a very slight sort of contour to the middle, slightly down, and then ends higher than he started, which, as far as I can tell, is virtually unique.
Why is that?
Which is interesting. My explanation would be it was a period of, same as Blair here, but without the complication of the Gulf in the same way. It was a period of economic boom. They were coming out of a recession into a recovery, and I think that helped them. And also it was the period of the sort of final realization of the neoliberal dream of selling off all government assets, privatizing things. So you had this windfall that was adding. So people were affluent. I think that's generally, I think presidential approval and stuff like that, it just tracks with how well off people are feeling.
You know, I was not expecting Clinton to be the exception to that.
Mm. Especially with the, you know, the scandal and the censure by Congress and all that kind of stuff.
Does that affect voters very much?
Well, I think I remember at the time the consensus or the prevailing wisdom was that in Europe that doesn't matter. A sex scandal doesn't affect your political whatever, but in America it very much does. And in terms of how the media reacted to it, it was a fucking scandal. Like, I mean, you remember it. It was. For like a decade after it happened, it was a standard joke on like evening talks, you know, the comedian evening, you know, they make a joke about Monica Lewinsky's dress. That didn't go away. It was such a part of the cultural zeitgeist.
Mm.
But in terms of its popularity, either in terms of approval rating or electoral success, didn't seem to have any effect whatsoever. No, the public didn't give a shit.
Yeah, I think, because I mean, also Trump has every sex scandal under the sun, right?
Yeah, I mean, Trump... it's different rules with Trump, but Trump, in terms of his approval rating, exact same pattern as everybody else.
I would have thought it would be more like boo 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 boo, boo. But no, it's no, just not
really. I mean all presidents are a little bit that, you know, day-to-day news happen. But no, he's just on a slow, steady down trajectory, just like everybody else.
Okay, so because the thing is with Trump is that he's definitely more of a wild card than any president in our lifetime.
I don't know. I think the difference between him and W. Bush is
that presentation.
How old were you around about W. Bush? Like, do you remember him? Were you old
teenager?
Enough to
yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I remember W. Yeah, yeah.
Because it was, because the exact same narrative, you know, from the Democrat side about this is the end of civilization, we can't have somebody like this in the presidency, he's a fucking idiot, this is embarrassing. All the same narratives existed around W as do around Trump. Trump has been more extreme, more blatantly disregarding of what the political mainstream wants. He's more of a maverick. He's more performatively cruel and stuff like that for sure. But I think they're very much of the same character. From different background, I'm not saying, you know, background very different, you know, Bush from a political dynasty, Trump
is from like a real estate dynasty, you know, he's...
Yeah, that's very different things in America.
I mean, yeah, he's in that...
In terms of background, I would say Trump is more like JFK.
Oh, right, yeah, okay. I mean, that's still a dynasty.
Who was also an outsider, and also a political outsider.
Yeah, but not like a class outsider.
I do think there's a, I don't know if distinction isn't the right word, but there's a distinction between the political nobility and the, well, there's also the, you know, the global financialized capital versus the provincial capital, and Trump's very much provincial capital. I think that's a bigger rift now, but I do think
is
the
he?
Political...
Is he? I wonder
yeah.
this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He is. I mean, every president is somewhat beholden to the markets, but I don't think he cares about the markets. That's not his. That's not what he cares about. He cares about land value, essentially, and stuff like that.
Also, okay, so the thing is with Trump is that, and this is a little bit of speculation and rumor, is that shortly before before he was on The Apprentice, apparently his personal wealth hit like an all-time low. Some people reckon he had as little as $5 million in, you know, in I don't know if it's like in the bank or in assets or whatever.
You imagine being that poor?
Yeah, I know. And now, what is he, like a billionaire or multi-billionaire or something like that?
Very hard. It's very hard to get tabs on, I think, isn't it? But I think he agreed to be quite a high billionaire. Yeah.
And a lot of that money seems to have been made through various different grifts since he became a political figure.
Yeah, so he's definitely doing things that are akin to insider trading and stuff like
grifting,
that
cryptocurrency happening. Stuff. You know, I mean, if he with his cryptocurrency, that is such a like perfect avenue for bribery. Like all some sort of foreign powers got to do is to influence him is like buy up a shitload of his coin at a good price.
Oh, yeah, and he would be I think a large part of why. He became president was to enrich himself. I think that's one of his main ego, of course, but also just. And I don't think we've had a president like that before. Because generally speaking, the presidency has not been. It's complicated, but generally, presidents have not enriched themselves directly through being president. I think he's the first to really do that, and other ones haven't done it because you know it seems like it would look bad.
Yeah, it's quite brazen.
Generally, at the end of your presidency, you get rewarded with, you know, ridiculously overpriced book deals and, you know, seats on boards and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you're taken care of for sure.
Mm.
But using the presidency itself as a lever to enrich yourself, I think that's novel. I think that is genuinely novel about Trump.
Yeah. I mean, do you think we were going to go to war with Iran in the way that we did in that incredibly chaotic and poorly planned out way with other presidents? With
no, 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 no. No, the only reason that, because Israel has been wanting that to happen for decades.
Yeah.
And every other president has either been smart enough or has listened to their advisor, you know, the military advisors enough to not do it.
Mm.
And Trump is clearly just stupid enough or impulsive
Or maybe enough. Maybe Netanyahu has dirt on Trump.
Or maybe Netanyahu's done Trump. Yeah, yeah, that's entirely possible.
Wasn't it said that Epstein might have been like a Mossad agent or
I think the Epstein stuff is somewhat over, not in terms of it's evil. To be clear, I'm not saying it's overstated in terms of what it is. It's a horrible thing, but in terms of its political salience, I think it's overstated. In the same way as that, I know it's a different character of thing, very much so, but as the same as the Monica Lewinsky stuff, I don't think the general public, I think they have a sort of a tabloidy interest in it as a salacious information. I don't think it affects many people's voting.
The number of politicians in it were relatively small in the Epstein files. It was more like your business moguls and stuff, wasn't it?
No, yeah, more so, yeah.
And let's be honest, who likes Bill Gates? We all knew he was a bit of a wrong, didn't we?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but I mean, it's a difficult thing to wrangle with in terms of, again, it's evil and I care about it as a moral thing, but it's as being, it's also to me, I don't mean it's an unsurprising thing, like I suspected there was a paedophile island where every, you know, like fucking Illuminati shit was happening. Like, I didn't suspect that specific thing, but it's not surprising.
It's not surprising.
No, and that's the problem. If it's not surprising, it's not going to, like, I would never have voted for Trump anyway.
No.
The kind of people who are, it's not surprising. So it's what you, I don't know, it's what you're expecting. If you,
it doesn't move the needle. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's politically salient. So I think these ideas that this is a distraction against that, I don't think that's as important to these people as people think.
Is it as important to Trump as people think, though?
Well, that's what I mean. I don't think so. I think he realizes that it's, yeah, politically it's not that big a deal. It's that simple. I think.
I think
liberals like to overstate how much this is done just for a distraction. I don't think that's the reason. I don't think that's the reason for it. I think it's a tiny, tiny, minuscule component, sure, but it's not the overwhelming reason.
Is it a distraction from the Melania movie?
Well, I've not heard about that, so it's worked. Yeah,
exactly. So do you not know about the Melania movie?
No.
So basically there was a movie made about Melania's life and it flopped, like, really badly. So,
is her life interesting?
I haven't seen the movie, so I guess I don't know. Oh my god, movie review of the Melania movie.
Got to watch it. We've got to watch it and do a freebooters about it.
Ah, shit, we do, don't we?
Yep.
It's going to be like the human fucking centipede all over again.
Which would you rather watch?
Human centipede.
Which would you rather, like Clockwork Orange style, have your eyes like pinned open and be forced to watch for 24 hours?
I mean, if it's the trilogy of the Human Centipede movies plus the porn films, yeah, sure. I can't find the porn version. It's got Brie Olsen in it, apparently. The Human Sexipede.
Who's Brie Olsen?
Brie Olsen was one of Charlie Sheen's partners.
She's not... Okay, well, you said Brie Olsen for some reason. I thought the lady who played Captain Marvel. That's Brie some... That's
Brie Lawson?
Yeah, okay, so not her. Okay.
Hang on a minute. Yeah, Brie Olsen.
She didn't seem like she would have been in a porn.
Yeah, yeah. Known professionally as Brie Olsen is an American actress, model, and former pornographic actress. 150 adult films.
Oh, it's not that... What? Did she only work for 2 weeks?
39.
That's pretty, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, she's in the third Human Centipede movie.
Okay.
So, you know, great casting, really. So it's yeah, yeah. But I can't. If anyone knows how to get the Human Sexipede,
is that what it's called?
Yeah, I think it's the Human Sexipede. I think there's a Wikipedia page about it as well.
It couldn't really have been called anything else, could it?
2010 American film, Human Sexipede. Yeah, this is a Wakerpedia page. Sunny Lakers Lindsay. Da, 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 Amber. Oh no. Oh, the Human Sexipede doesn't have Brie Olsen in it. I must be thinking of another one.
Who was I thinking of? What's her name? Girl, fucking IMDb. Brie Larson. That is a very similar name.
It is a very similar name. Yeah.
You said Brie Larson, didn't you? Yeah.
No, I said Brie Olsen. Oh no, then I said Brie Larson.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah. We've got to get our Olsons and Larsons the right way around, right?
Goddamn Scandinavians.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, honestly, because, like, they killed Epstein over it, so it must have mattered somewhat to them.
Well, I think I don't think they killed Epstein over it because he was going to, like, go to the press. I think they killed Epstein over it because he had a fuck ton of blackmailable information.
I mean, isn't that sort of two very similar reasons? Like,
well, whether people would care if it was... I mean, even if it doesn't move the needle politically, it's not something you want out there. I think that's a fair thing to say.
Okay, that's
so you'll be willing to play. You'll be willing to play blackmail, even if the actual practical ramifications of it come. I mean, it's a hassle it coming out. Right? It's a huge.
I mean,
hassle.
Theoretically, Trump can't run for another term.
What do you mean theoretically?
He might try. He's joked about trying it before.
I mean, it is directly. I mean, the Constitution says you can't. I
mean, the Constitution says a lot of things.
I mean, some things are easier to ignore than others. I think it, not meeting the legal requirements to get on the ballot, I think would be a bigger blocker than, you know.
I don't know, because haven't there been like some candidates that have theoretically not been able to be on the ballot, but
I mean, there's always the write-in thing, isn't there, in America? You can just write in a candidate. Yeah, I mean,
that.
I think in order to, I had a conversation with Shah about this. You know, just in terms of will Trump try to stay in power? I think realistically, when you get right down to it, I think he'd have to have the military on side to do that.
And you don't think he'll
And
get the military on side?
I don't think the military's on his side, no, especially after Iran. And I would say probably, and I don't mean all cops, but I think generally the cops are probably on his side. So if you want a cops versus military civil war, and Shah made the point, National Guard, I think the National Guard would be on his side. So I think there's a scenario where you have the National Guard and the cops, broadly speaking, against the military, broadly speaking. The military defending the Constitution and the cops. And that's possible, but is he willing to? I think that's the only way you get it. I think it would have to be effectively a coup or a civil war for that to be a thing. I don't think he could do it without being challenged, just going, no, fuck it. Let's ignore the Constitution. Unless he, and the other option is he somehow manages to just declare a state of emergency, which allows you to, I believe, push back the election. That's a possibility, but again, I think that would be challenged. And I think, honestly, I'm saying obviously a lot. I'm not the biggest fan of the American military. Don't think they're a force for good in the world, to say the
No.
fucking least. But I think in terms of that kind of internal thing, I think the military would be on the side of defending, you know, American democracy and the Constitution. I think they would. Because remember, every one of the big indicators for whether you're a Trump supporter or not is education level. And every US military officer has to have a college degree.
Okay. If you rise up through the ranks, do you then have to get a college degree?
To rise above an NCO, I think, I believe. I'm not 100% on that, but I believe so, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I
Because
would
I don't
imagine.
think you can be. This might be all. Because in our military, at least in the past, I think this is still a thing. You can't. I don't think you can be promoted above NCO or like Chief Petty Officer in the Navy without officer training. And I think officer training includes getting a degree in
Oh,
America.
okay.
I
But then I'm
believe.
assuming
That
that there
might
are
be wrong.
avenues through the military to get that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. There's probably like a special. In the same way that my bus company teaches me how to drive a bus and gets me all my bus qualifications. Like it's
Which is handy.
yeah. It's a great way to
Be awkward if they didn't.
Yeah, it'd be kind of weird if like not all bus companies do this, but like it would be kind of strange if you had to go out and get your Category D license on your own.
I was just thinking you turned up as a bus driver and they're like, do you know how to drive a bus? And you're like, no. And they're like, well, good luck.
Yes. It's
You'll figure it
interestingly
out.
enough, it's a very well-regulated industry, and
Good.
I feel like, like being on the inside of it, I feel quite reassured that they do everything that's realistically possible to like
I mean,
keep people
that is
safe.
reasonable given that it's, how heavy is a bus?
It's about 10 tons.
Is that unloaded?
Yeah, generally, yeah.
And the people would add another half
15 people are about a ton.
an. Oh, 15 people are around a ton. Okay, so that's a good few tons of
Yeah.
metal hurtling down
This
the
is
road.
okay. So
Yeah.
the one thing about bus driving I wish I could impart to everyone on the road is, for the love of God, please understand and acknowledge and act upon the fact that a bus takes substantially longer to slow down and stop than a car.
I think I was aware of that. I was definitely aware of that with when driving, and I didn't drive much, and I was a bad driver. But I was aware that I didn't want to do something that would force a truck or a bus to slow down because it's a
Yeah.
pain in the ass for them to speed back up. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not only that, we've got people in on our bus that don't have seat belts.
Yes.
So
Yeah.
it's
Which seems like an awful idea.
yeah, I thought that as well, but then part of it is like people are standing up and getting off and sitting down so much
Yeah.
that
Do they
it
have, like, I've not been on a bus obviously since the 90s, and like buses back then were like a bench seat with like a metal rail in front of you. And like, if that's, you know, if that crashed, if that went from 60 to a wall, like, I'm going to get like cutting off or whatever. Do they have, are they disabled?
You don't have the metal bar, you just go into the back of the seat in front.
Do they have airbags or anything?
No.
No,
But
okay.
we don't go, I mean, our buses are limited at 50 miles an hour. But a lot, and not even the drivers. As a driver, I don't get a seatbelt either.
Oh, you don't?
No. I think part of it is, not to be too capitalistic about it, but, you know, a bus has, like, what, 80 seats on it, a double-decker bus.
Mm.
Checking and verifying all those seatbelts every single day would take a lot of time, a lot of work, and repairing them would be incredibly difficult and expensive.
I mean, I guess also, just in terms of what I believe is called physics, like if you're in a car going even like just 60 or something, and you hit something like a wall or a bus or whatever, you're going from 60 to zero in the space of nothing, basically. And it's the deceleration that is the problem.
Yeah.
Whereas in a bus, you're generally going to hit something less heavy than you. So you're going to, the other thing that's got the problem more than the bus is going to slow down relatively slowly.
Definitely so, yeah. And all this, you know, we have substantial amounts of training to make sure that we don't put ourselves in positions.
Yes. Yeah. You're going to be better trained than the average driver. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's there are like levels of training and beyond what a car driver would have. But people get into cars and the brakes in cars are really good nowadays. They're excellent nowadays, to be honest. Especially with like regenerative braking and all that kind of thing. You can stop on a dime. You can go exactly as fast as you want at any given second. Like electric cars are fucking great for this, and they whiz off like acceleration, torque's amazing on them. It's just And then people will often like pull in front of a. So as a bus driver, I will leave a greater gap in front of me on like dual carriageways, so that if cars slow down or do something unexpected, I've got more time to react. What irritates me then is that people will then see that space in front of me and fill it up and take that as an invitation to be like, ooh. Yeah. And then sometimes they'll brake. They'll be like, ooh, I need to get off at this turning. Zoom in front of a bus, brake harshly, turn out.
No, that's dickish. That is dickish.
And I hate how do that. Yeah. But also, we've got these devices on all of the buses that monitors how we drive. So if we brake too harshly, we steer too harshly, we weave in and out to all that kind of stuff. All this stuff is like monitored. And we've got a little app, or you can visit the website, where you can actually see every single point on your journey exactly where you've done something wrong.
The way you fucked up, basically, where you can improve.
Yeah, I mean, it's got green, orange, and red levels. Green is good. Orange is like, take a look at that. Red is like, oh. So all of that information, it gets fed back up, obviously, to head office and all that kind of stuff. So if you get too many of these, like a few warnings here and there, that's expected, because people will pull out in front of you. You've got to brake harshly. Sometimes you've got to react to conditions, all that kind of stuff. But if you get too many of them, it gives you a score, and you've got to keep your score under 20. My score at the moment, I think, is about 10, which is really good for someone of my experience level. I know people that are on
over 20. I assume
you get a warning. Yeah, you get a letter, and then if it's they don't like
it. Good. I mean, it's good to know that it's well regulated and well thingied. Yeah.
Also, of course, there's CCTV cameras on like every corner of a bus as well. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So basically, like if we have
inward pointing or outward pointing,
both.
Oh wow.
Yeah, like it's all around and audio. So
don't do crimes near buses.
Don't do crimes near buses. There's so much. A lot of it is like legal liability as well. Like if we were to hit someone, we want to know exactly what happens. A lot of it is they want to catch drivers on their phones. That makes it sound like they're out to get
use their phones.
That's like, obviously, that's a big no-no. Is using your phones behind a wheel. Obviously, you know, that's understandable.
Even if you're like stationary for 5 minutes,
the general rule is the general rule is get out of the bus cab if you're going to use your phone.
Right, fair enough. That makes sense. Yeah,
that makes it clear. Keeps it clear. Makes it completely unambiguous. You can, on occasion, just get away with just turning the engine off if you're just checking like a route diversion or some roadworks or something. That'll be okay. That's legal. The thing is with the CCTV cameras is they record like everything, the speed you're going, whether or not the engine's on, all that kind of stuff. So they know for a fact that your engine is off when you're on the phone.
Right.
So that's
right.
Now it's recorded, so it doesn't go live to someone who's like got a big wall of monitors. That's like,
oh, I'd love that job. That'd be great.
It's all just recorded in a black box, and that black box gets downloaded at the end of the day. Right. And there are like pretty strict rules about what your boss is allowed to see. So if you have an incident, I knocked a mirror off. I drove too close to a hedge and knocked my mirror off. So I got a. You have to fill out a form to say like what happened, and then my manager has a little policy where he's like, whenever there's an incident of any kind, they like you to take a look at the CCTV just to see, how you could have avoided that particular accident. So I sat in his office, we looked at it, go through, and he goes, that's the culprit, which was like this particular branch. That was just like sticking out, and it's just like, dang, these things happen, but it's always good to like take a look at it and see how it can be avoided in the future. But they're only permitted to watch 10 minutes up until the accident.
Why is that?
Privacy reasons, I guess.
Or you, or passengers, or
both, maybe.
Yeah,
I guess they don't want managers creeping on people or whatever, or.
I guess that makes sense.
It's the thing is because the company I work for is quite big, everything's done by procedure. Like there's just rules and regulations and things to do there. So it might just be that's just what the rules are. That's what they considered appropriate when they wrote out the rules or whatever.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, I can see the sense of it. Yeah. Just wondered what the fear was, creeping on people.
It's an incredibly well regulated industry, and I feel more reassured than any,
Because
sometimes you think
incredibly safe anyway, but this is all
reassuring. Yeah. So I don't know how I got on buses as well. Were we on?
Well, I think we've conclusively settled the issue of what your relationship with YouTube should be.
Yeah, yeah.
We've delved deep.
Oh God. I do want to kill it.
I mean, you've said what's stopping you. Yeah, and I get it. I mean, on the one hand, I think we were chatting about this, weren't we, on the Discord with people, and somebody was like, why bother deleting? You don't gain anything tangible from deleting it. Why not just leave it there? And then if you ever decide you want to do something with it, it's there. But I think it's sort of peace of mind. Like you just want to,
it's mental.
You want
it
off your mind. You also don't want to throw away what you've got.
Yeah. Also, there is an option to just like private my channel.
I mean, that might be a good thing to do. Do that, you know. I mean, it might be asking a bit much for you, but like, do that for a year. See how it feels. And if you feel like you haven't missed anything, then do it for another year. And then if at the end of that year you feel the same way, just delete it. Something like that. But I know you are very choppy changey.
I'm awfully choppy changey.
It feels like it would be a mistake to just outright delete it, because there will come a point where you'd want to do something. I mean, maybe it'd be fun to start from scratch on YouTube. I don't know, for you, like you like building, you like projects, you like starting things and honing them and then moving on to something else. Like I say,
it does feel like the channel sort of had its day, right? Like.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, that's out of your choice more than anything else. Like you've chosen not to engage with what you would need to engage with to keep it relevant, or whatever the word would be.
Well, I was thinking about this as well. It's like I could just post videos that just like the talk about like leading people to PeerTube and leading people to Owncast and leading people to.
That's something I was going to mention. Yeah, I mean there is a value in. I mean, I've not watched all of it so far yet, but your most recent video where it is essentially that you're talking about how PeerTube and Owncast are better than YouTube.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, the YouTube AI suggests I make more videos like that.
YouTube AI is a traitor.
Yeah. So, but then again, so I might do, like, if I do a video about RSS, for example, that might go on there, or a video, about small tech or something, which fits.
That is this is part of the problem, I guess, is that is a relatively limited well, unless you're explicitly starting out to milk that and just, do essentially repeated same topics over and over again.
Yeah. I mean,
I think that's a legitimate. It's a bit of a balm for your conscience. You're using it to propagandize Owncast and PeerTube and so on to YouTube users. It's not a bad thing to do.
Yeah, Yeah, but then there's what appeals to me, it's not just the push away from YouTube as well, it's the pull of Fedi and PeerTube and self-hosting stuff. Because to be honest, if it wasn't for our good friend Hamish, I probably wouldn't be on PeerTube because I don't like the idea of I like the idea of being on an instance of like friends, basically. To me, that is a big appeal to the whole thing. Like, it's got that benefit that other people can like feed into it, reply to it, all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, we're just a bit of like, it feels a little bit like the crew of the Firefly on the show Firefly, Like we're just we're just like political idealists or whatever, just trying to make
He's
it.
more like it's more like Neelix's breakfast show on the show Star Trek, the superior show Star Trek Voyager.
Okay, yeah. And even so, if it wasn't for PeerTube, maybe it'd just be self-hosting it. Maybe I'd do like a Plock, but for video, which I kind of have done, but it doesn't. I feel like, do you know what's kind of weird is, would it need thumbnails?
Wings wrestled with this when he's been making his videos. I think he did it. I think he ended up doing thumbnails, as opposed to just
I think he
whatever
does, yeah.
first frame of the thing.
Or even just a title.
Even just the title. I do like the idea of people just self-hosting their video and stuff on their own site, but partly because it's, moving away from this idea of everything being connected to everything. And also just because that's a nice thing to find, like a little treasure trove of, oh, they've got loads of these videos that I'm interested in. That's a nice thing to discover.
Also, sort of tangentially to all of this as well, when I talk about like what I want to keep and what I don't want to keep in terms of content, right? Because of course we play a lot of games. We've gone through Divinity 2, now we're doing Divinity 1. And I think whenever we like live stream it or something, I do keep the archives of it. Because I like it. Like, to me, it's pleasant memories. But then I don't know, does that, but like I never rewatch them really. But I so does that, like, the ephemerality of Owncast is something that I really like. Like, it's a moment people come together, and people don't really care for video on demands for the most part. There are like exceptions out there for like super big, streamers and stuff, or people that do more show style live streams. But for people that are just hanging out, I don't think VODs are
If
like.
you're just hanging out, yeah. I think if you're the kind of streamer who sort of creates a narrative around a long running thing, and it becomes you read it like a narrative. There's value in that. But like you say, when it's more of just like a hangout, I mean, what you can always do is, like when we're hanging out on Discord, and we had some interesting chats while we were playing the other day. You can take those out and make those on into videos somewhere. Take that chunk out. If you can be asked, it's a bit of work, but. There's that option, but yeah, I mean, we've been over this ground many times. I lean way more towards ephemerality and enjoying ephemerality, embracing ephemerality for most things. There's certain things I keep a copy of, but yeah, I'm quite happy for things to be, even if it's a little bit disappointing down the road. Just something I enjoyed, then a couple of years later, I look it up and it's like, oh, it's gone. Oh, that's a shame. But I think you fucking move on with your life. Encourages you to find something new.
A little bit feels like my mind has been poisoned a little bit, by the nature of YouTube, by the nature of Google, and the archival of things, and like the idea that losing something is, like I think I lean too much in the over archival of things a little bit.
I do think there's a legitimate side to that for sure.
But then I delete a lot of
But
archives as well, but then sometimes I regret it, so I don't know. Like,
well, we've been polluted. So I think it's fundamentally a corporate idea that we can this is data, and data should be stored, and we can store this data forever. I think it's that mindset. And I think we've been poisoned by postmodernism to not be able to recognize the difference between the stuff that's worth saving and the stuff that isn't, the stuff that's of some cultural or historical significance, and the stuff that's just of its moment, serving its community in its time, doesn't need recording. And I think sort of like a historical view gets brought into it. What would historians want to keep? And of course, a historian would want to keep everything because they want as maximal information. But then, I think there's a balance to be struck. I think embracing ephemerality for certain things and certain categories of things is healthy, apart from anything else.
It allows you to move on. I think this is why I struggle with this YouTube thing. I don't like, it's one thing I can't move on from.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do kind of want to move on from it. But also, like, we're having this conversation now. I think this is fucking great YouTube content. I'm sorry. I hate that. yeah, and it's even like the long form stuff is good, and it's like, oh, I wish I could. I don't know. I wish this just didn't live in my brain the way that it does. It's getting to the point now where it's just you know.
I think from what you're saying, I think you would feel better if you deleted it. There's a potential for regret down the road, but how big is that regret going to be, really?
I want someone to tell me what you've just told me, but I don't know if that's just looking for validation for doing something that I fundamentally want to do. Like, again, you know.
There's something. Actually, I think I might have got this from The Big Bang Theory. They were talking about making decisions and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said, you know, if it's a binary decision, flip a coin, and how you feel as to what the coin tells you more than blah, 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 blah. And I think that rings true to me. Like, if it feels 50-50 and you flip a coin and you're like, oh, then do the other thing, you know? Or if you're like, oh, good, it's reinforced. I think that gives you just a momentary, it tricks the brain into giving you like a deeper, you know. Sponsored right. by Big Bang Theory.
I've actually got on my desk, I've got a legitimate counterfeit £1 coin that I got given on the buses.
That's cool.
It's like most of the way there, but it's not quite a full proper pound coin. It looks
is it worth counterfeiting a pound coin?
That's kind of like why I counted it. It's like why?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Okay, right. Heads I delete, tails I don't. I didn't feel anything.
Which was it?
It's tails. I don't.
No delete. Yeah. 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 Well, that didn't work. Fuck you, Big Bang Theory.
It was also on Frasier, to be fair.
Was it?
Yeah.
I've noticed a lot of like comedy ideas that they've stolen from other things.
Oh, I think now at this point it's just tropes and homages and stuff, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
There's always one episode where they're in a hotel and there's rooms that switch.
I love that. I love a farce. I love an old fashioned farce. Yeah. I love that shit. There's also this one isn't a thing anymore, but I think in like maybe up to the 80s, like 50s to 80s, there was always an episode of a sitcom where they have to divide the house in half or divide the room in half.
Or one where they get snowed in. Always one where they get snowed in.
Snowed in.
Like
good.
A bottle episode. And yeah, now I've always thought that a bottle episode is one of those episodes which is fundamentally done on a budget where all of the characters, it's a character piece, they're like snowed in or something, or they're in a small set. And the whole episode takes place in that set. And I've always thought the reason for that was that in the days of television, you would have a series of something, a season of something, but because the seasons were like 25 episodes-ish, and they were scheduling that over the course of TV, there would be some weeks, like special weeks, like, oh, there'd be like a sports event or the Queen dies or something like that, you know, that would disrupt the TV schedule. So the long-running seasons would need to have a little bit of flex in them so that they could take a week out or put a week in as necessary.
So an episode that could fit anywhere in the running and not affect the broader...
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is budgetary. In order to do the extravagant episode, you have to do some cheap episodes. I think it's partly that. But yeah, what you're saying makes perfect sense. Yeah, I don't know if that's the reason, but...
Because you hear about like episodes of Doctor Who that have like got lost and never been found. Were they aired and lost? Were they never aired and just lost? Or
did somebody at BBC do me a favour and lose all of them?
Yeah. Or there was... I think I found on Pirate Bay an episode of Dad's Army that was like lost and never aired or something.
God.
There are some fucking big Dad's Army fans out there.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say there were some good Dad's Army episodes. Nope. I'm not even going to entertain it.
I'd rather
watch a million seasons of Big Bang Theory than a single fucking episode of that dross.
No, it's good. It's wholesome. It's
that is fucking Last of the Summer Wine and fucking...
Oh, Last of the Summer Wine. If you want to see three old guys go down a hill in a bathtub, that's the show for you.
What was the other one about? Like Cockneys being Cockneys. What was that one called?
Oh, Only Fools and Horses.
Fuck that one as well, Jesus.
That has some good episodes, but it definitely overstayed its welcome.
I don't want to see Cockneys. Why would you want to see Cockneys?
It had its moments. I can't see the trouble is often I will find something that's like relatively mediocre and you will hate something, and then I find it necessary to defend something that I don't feel that strongly about. Partly because there will be people listening to us that are like, come on, Chris, defend Only Fools and Horses. It's a British staple. And it's like, it made me laugh a few times. It's all right.
It's no Keeping Up Appearances. Or Have You Been Served? They were the good ones.
One Foot in the Grave?
One Foot in the Grave I'm neutral on. I can see the book. I think it became a bit reactionary.
The longer
it went on, but I think it started as a fun idea, and I think it got a bit.
I'll tell you what, what never gets mentioned is Thin Blue Line. I think that show's genius.
I have vaguely heard of that. I don't think I've ever seen.
So it's actually one of those like sitcoms that's not actually afraid to be political. It's kind of funny because the constables are like quite left wing, like they're accidentally left wing. They're not supposed to be left wing, but they're like accidentally left wing, and then you got CID that are like quite right wing. They're a bit reformy sort of reactionary kind of thing. Yeah. And then you've got Sergeant, who's played by Rowan Atkinson, who is a Lib Dem. Like he is the stereotypical Lib Dem. And you've got those sort of political forces bouncing off of each other in really well written and sort of worked out ways.
That sounds interesting and that sounds good. And now I know the reason I never watched it will be Rowan. I can't watch Rowan Atkinson. I can't fucking stand to see his fucking face.
Oh, well.
Which is strange because I think Blackadder is very good.
Yeah.
But I just can't watch Rowan Atkinson. He just fucking irritates me.
Also, so me and Rosie recently, in the process of watching all the Blackadders, we're up to season 3 at the moment. And I'll tell you what, season 1, really fucking good. It's always been
which one? Season one.
It's the one with Brian Blessed. It's the one where it's
setting.
Battle of Bosworth Field.
Elizabethan. No.
Before that.
Civil War. Charles.
Richard. Is it?
Was Bosworth not part of the English Civil War? Am I mixing up?
I think so. Richard the Third-ish kind of era.
Okay, because I've seen them all, obviously, because you couldn't not living it.
Yeah,
I very much like the Elizabethan one. I don't really like any of the others.
Elizabethan. I think they're all kind of good in their own way. I think towards
What's the Face who plays Queen Elizabeth?
Oh,
amazing,
great.
Amazing performance.
Yeah, she's in an episode in season 3. She's definitely best as Queenie. I think season 4, they start reusing jokes a little bit and you sort of know that it's coming to a natural end.
Yeah.
4 seasons of 6 episodes apiece is a good run. They ended it before it got too long.
I just can't watch Rowan Atkinson. I think it's a good show. I do think it's a good show.
I'll tell you what I really enjoyed was This Time with Steve Coogan and Alan Partridge.
Don't know that one.
It's quite new. I think it's on BBC iPlayer still. It basically takes the mick out of those magazine shows like your Piers Morgan and your Richard Madley very directly.
right.
And it's,
I think Alan Partridge is a genius creation. And absolutely like pinpoint observed. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that carries through.
Much about British.
Yeah.
And I think virtually unique to Britain as well. That kind of media personality. I don't think you get that in America really.
No.
Jay Leno are not like your Terry Wogans. They're in the same rough valence, but they're not the
Jay
same
Leno thing. Seems like a much more interesting guy.
I don't know about that, but
not as a person to watch on telly, just as a person of his telly.
All I know is he collects cars.
Yeah, but he does it in an interesting way. Which I know because I don't like cars and car people and things like that as well either. I feel like I'm defending a contradiction at this point.
Compared to like your Terry Wogan or your Parky or whatever, like there was always an aura, and it's a very American thing, like the equivalent in America, like they were cool. They were trying to be cool. They were read as cool. Whereas, no, I don't think anybody ever thought Terry Wogan was cool.
No, he was a respite from a lot of that kind of stuff. I mean, he was solidly Radio 2.
Yes, yeah, I think that's accurate.
Yeah, I mean, I would personally be more Radio 4 if I was on the radio, I think.
Yeah.
Although Radio 4 is a bit more structured. And I'd have to live with the Archers. And I...
Yeah, that's always... I think the thing that stopped me at times in my life when I'd be quite happy to just have the radio on in the background, the thing that stopped me just having Radio 4 on in the background, because it's largely interesting. I can see it through Gardner's Question Time, no problem.
Yeah, no problem.
It's interesting. But the fucking Archers...
Okay, this has actually given me a great idea for a video.
Are we going to do a radio sitcom? Not sitcom.
Do you remember the old TV the TV program? It's not on anymore, called Room 101.
Yes, I do, yeah.
Yeah, where you choose, what is it, like five items that go into Room 101?
Oh, yeah! That would be fun.
That would be a good episode.
Yeah.
Do we do two episodes? You quiz me, I quiz you with the five things.
Or yeah, we each have an episode. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely
a good one. And then... Yeah, the host decides whether it goes in, don't they? That's how that works.
You have to make a case.
You essentially have to prosecute your case, and yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Dan, that's a really good idea. That's even better than the tier list of the letters of the alphabet.
It is even better than that, yeah.
I don't want to spoil it. I think Elon Musk has ruined the letter X.
I don't want to give him that much power.
Well, I mean...
Unfortunately, capitalism does.
Yeah. I don't think he was even that popular in rich people circles.
Spoiler for when we do it, I'm not a fan of the letter C.
It's not a cool letter, is it? Despite it starting the word.
No, but a little bit of a teaser, I guess. The letter C can be replaced by either S or K. It's never anything else. We do not need it.
How would you get the sound ch?
We'd have. Would I get rid of H? No, we could either do KH for Ch, or just have. My choice would be X for that.
XH or just X?
Just X.
See, I think your argument's fallen apart there. I think that's what. It's not that C is needed as a letter on its own. It's how it supports other letters.
There's only Ch. That's the only thing we're losing.
What about the letter U?
Vowels. I think I might have to think this through.
We've got
a
enough
bit.
Vowels. We're all right with vowels.
No. The opposite, or not the opposite. I think. Okay, I'm going to say this and then work out whether I believe it or not later, rather than all.
Great internet logic.
I think we should go down to one vowel sound. Why do we need so many vowel sounds?
No, well, of course we need lots of vowel sounds. Vowels are.
I'm going to the Shoop. I'm going to Bui. Sum, fruit, pustules. You understood exactly what I was saying. It doesn't matter.
Hang on a minute. Are we creating an efficient language here? Or because like, is what to what degree do you want the poetry of the language to remain?
I lean towards wanting to efficientize the English. Because first of all, I mean, I get rid of Q. Q can fuck off. Q, and it inherits this from Latin. We've been this stupid for this long. Q cannot exist. Apart from in loan words, Q does not exist without U. It's not even... If it can't stand on its fucking own, it's not a letter. And Q can be replaced by K and KW. Queen, KWEEN.
Okay, Quest, QWEST.
Yeah, KWEST, exactly, yeah. Yeah, so we'll get rid of Q, we'll get rid of C.
In my head, Qua and Qua, Queen, and Queen... I don't know. My head interprets them differently, but exactly. But it might be nothing.
And also, I would like to move back to pre-standardization of spelling. Language is more fun when you read medieval things and the spelling of a given word can change in the fucking page you're reading because they just spell shit however they felt like in the moment. That's lovely. Let's go back to that.
Is it Samuel Johnson that did the dictionary?
Yeah, who was from my neck of the woods. He was from Uxeter.
Maybe.
It's a monument. He famously stood in the rain in Uxeter. So this is kind of cool. I kind of like this. So as a young lad, his dad ran a market stall in Uxeter Marketplace. And one day, like, he bunked off work and didn't go and work on his father's stall. And the guilt of this haunted him his entire life. So as an adult, he came and stood for an entire day in the rain in Uxeter Marketplace to make amends. It's like a pennant, which is really kind of, there's a monument to this in the marketplace. It's lovely.
Oh, that is kind of sweet and a little bit Protestant.
It's quite funny. Oh, I think you can read that either Catholic or Protestant.
I mean, isn't Catholicism a little bit like? I mean, Catholicism's got a bit more of a wider history than Protestantism, right? In terms of like, because you know, you can think of like the fun, lively Irish Catholicism.
Oh, Wing's gonna love you saying that.
Oh, is it? But then again, yeah. But then there's the counter to that, which is a little bit more like.
No, I see the other one. Irish. Irish Catholicism is the browbeating.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Like authoritarian, and then like Spanish or
Italian.
Like the party, like just yeah. But no, what I do like, for turning this into a religion podcast, what I like about Catholicism is so ideally, as it used to be, the mass is in a language you don't understand.
Yeah.
So you go to church. It feels all special and magical. They're using magical words to describe a magical being that you can't comprehend. You don't even understand what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
That shit's not your problem. That's the priest's problem. You have a class, a literal class, whose responsibility is to take care of that shit for you. Mm-hmm. So when you sin, and we're all sinners because of original sin, but when we commit sins. You go to your priest, you say your confession, your priest takes care of that for you, that is the end of your responsibility, and you're free. You are freed from that sin. That's the end of the road with that sin for you. And that is very liberating. Not having to worry about that shit, I think, is very liberating, as opposed to Protestantism. Obviously, there's lots of flavours, but broadly speaking, you're supposed to actually read and understand the Bible. That's a lot of fucking work.
Mm-hmm.
And interpret it and decide what the rules are for yourself and that kind of, or within a community or for yourself. And like, that's a lot of fucking work and responsibility. And you're going to feel bad all the time.
Also, like, the Bible's a very political document, right? Historically speaking, what's left in, what's kept out, all that kind of stuff is all, it's all got history with it. A lot of it is because, you know, allegedly I heard that there were like books in the Bible that were written by women that aren't in the Bible anymore.
I mean, the Apocrypha, stuff that wasn't included, tons of it. Yeah.
So it feels to me like there's a lot of context with religious texts that your layperson will not really understand. So, for example, there's a lot of rules in the Bible that seem to be based around the hygiene of the time. Mm-hmm. And we obviously have
shellfish and pork rot more quickly than... Yeah.
But now we have a greater understanding of that kind of thing, so we can move on. And that doesn't...
Well, I mean, part of the point... I mean, it depends on your reading to some extent, but part of the point of Christianity as opposed to Judaism or whatever is that the Old Testament was the Old Covenant. The New Covenant is the blood of Christ.
Yeah.
So the Old Testament, if you're a Christian, you're not really supposed to give a shit what the rules of the Old Testament are. Mm. You're supposed to care what your boy Jesus says. That's arguable and varies depending on you, but broadly speaking, that's supposed to be... So when all these, you know, American right-wing bellend Christians are using Leviticus to justify being a homophobic piece of shit, they're doing it wrong.
Doing Christianity. So is that just I mean, I should know this having gone to church school, but you know, you leave that stuff behind, don't you? It was a very New Testament school. It's very Church of England, and I don't know if today's Church of England is as Protestant-y as... There was a little bit of that, but like, I kind of feel like it's a bit more liberal nowadays, you know? Like, there's...
Well, I mean, growing up Catholic, Church of England stuff, because I grew up Catholic, never went to a Catholic school, always went to a Church of England school, so was, you know, made to go to various Church of England services and blah, 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 and, you know, Church of England leaning assemblies and stuff. Church of England, you know, compared to that Catholic upbringing, Catholic mass and so on, Church of England seemed like Catholic cosplay. Like, not actually a religion, just the formal trappings of a religion without actually being a religion. And I don't mean that in an insulting way. I think it's taking a religion, de-religifying it, and turning it into just part of the cultural fabric, part of the civic fabric. It's a very secularized, to me, it reads as a very secularized sort of institution and just sort of a very Lib Dem-y kind of, in a positive way, I mean, a Lib Dem-y kind of liberal force within our society, at least in the last few hundred years. you know, broadly speaking, a force for good. They were behind, you know, behind emancipation movements and generally on the side of poor people. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you know, a nice little civic, cozy little part of English, blah, blah.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, because, you know, I've been to various religious bits and pieces when I was younger, and there was never any scrutiny on what your belief system was.
Mm.
Like, it's like, oh, like, I was never told to hate gay people. I was never told, no. I was never told any to have any opinions on abortion. I was never told, you know, like, it's all just like generally share, be chill. And
I think generally, you know, yeah, I think Church of England is a very Catholic leaning, at least, again, formally Catholic leaning, you know, compared to other, you know, it's Quakerism is interesting in its own right. I think Quakerism is quite nice, but they're not. Well, the ones that are very plain, you know, they're basically iconoclastic. Oh, I can't think of the name. Anyway, they're not those kind of like Protestants. They're a bit more Catholic leaning. And
like the pilgrimy ones?
It's a very mainstream. It's one of the bigger Protestant branches in the UK, and I can't remember what they're called. Very kind of Lib Demi, very...
Pentecostal?
No.
Episcopalian's American, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's just American for Church of England, basically. What are they called? My girlfriend when I was young, their family was this. You know, the name's like... It doesn't really matter.
Baptist?
My point is more...
Methodist?
No. Methodists, yes, thank you. Yeah, Methodists.
I always felt Methodists were a little less into their fun.
Yes, no, they are. Yeah, they were always like behind like the temperance movement and shit that. Yeah, so they were very abstention and shit, very sort of dour, but not mean with it. Not, you know, never homophobic and whatnot. But I also think Catholicism is, again, I think Ireland does it very different. I think Northern Europe does Catholicism different, but a more Southern European style of Catholicism. And what I experienced, honestly, in this country, like, for example, like, I was an altar boy. Mm-hmm. And my priest for most of my time going to church, he was just an openly gay man with a gay partner, which wasn't allowed by the church by any means, but just nobody gave a shit. Mm-hmm. Like, it was never important to anybody. And that's generally my experience of Catholicism, just like a sort of, and again, I think it's an advantage of Catholicism that we have this, you know, you go to confession, that's dealt with. It feels less judgy than a lot of Protestant stuff. I'm not for a moment say there aren't, I'm sure, Catholic communities that can be very judgy, but that wasn't my impression of it. It's very sort of just live and let live kind of feeling.
Yeah, I was always told, but I think, I don't know if this is like a joke or something like this, that one of the reasons why like mafiosos and people like Agent 47 choose Catholicism, because Agent 47 becomes Catholic, is because... All you got to do to be absolved of your sins is to make a substantial donation to the Catholic Church.
I mean, that was a big problem in the leading up to the Reformation. That was a bit of an issue. But you don't even need to do that. You just go to confession.
Yeah. So
I do. I mean, Catholic imagery is also funny imagery. You know, whichever Hitman game it is that literally opens with Ave Maria playing. Like,
that's a few of them.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Blood Money, I think, might be the one you're thinking of, but yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I love Ave Maria. It's lovely.
That's great, yeah. Banger.
Mm. Charlotte Church did a lovely version of that.
I'm sure she did, and I heard that one.
Yeah, no, she's great, is Charlotte Church. She's, I want to say, either from Newport or the Valleys. But she had a rough time growing up.
She always seemed cool. Like, I've seen her. I've seen her on stuff, seen her in interviews. She seemed like, you know, down to earth and fun.
Yeah, still about. She was born in Llandaff in Cardiff.
Yeah.
Oh, and also brought up as Roman Catholic. So there you go.
There you go.
She came. I always felt like she was a little bit like one of those. Because she started, it says here on Wikipedia, she started. It says Charlotte's musical break came at the age of 11. And I always feel like there was a little bit like, I don't know, like she worked. She worked too much as a kid, and you know how that sort of...
Yeah, no, that's never...
Yeah.
I think they're better at managing that now than they used to be.
But definitely.
In that period, that was very damaging.
She sings in English, Welsh, Latin, Italian, and French.
Yeah.
Yeah, she always strikes me as great. She dated Gavin Henson for a while. I don't think they're still together, which, you know...
I remember that,
yeah.
One of those celebrities who just seems sort of chill.
Yeah, and hang on a minute. She's political activities.
This is where we take everything.
Oh, appearance at the Levinson Inquiry. Explain. She's a member of the media campaign group Hacked Off. People's she demonstrated against austerity
Good.
in favor of the People's Assembly. Oh, endorsed Jeremy Corbyn's campaign.
Okay, she's great then.
Some environmental process supports Plaid Cymru. That's good.
Yeah, cool.
Supporter of Welsh independence. Oh, hang on a minute. I did a recorded singing in support of Palestine.
All right, so yeah, no, okay, yeah. We're on
Okay.
Charlotte Church, official opera singer of Freebooters.
Yeah. Oh, well, there we go. Oh, yes, that she seems. Yeah, no, she. Yeah. She gets the Freebooters seal of approval. So,
Oh, we need a graphic for
I. Yeah. The
that.
Freebooters seal
We need
of approval. Yeah. I think she's a little bit like of a national institution enough that she can sing in favor of Palestine and not be
an
completely
editor.
cancelled. Like, you can't. You know, she's
Also,
all.
I think that probably flies better in Wales than it does in England. You don't have the same.
Yeah.
You just lean more left, I think, in general.
We do, although I'm a bit worried about reform gaining ground in the Senate elections.
While you lean more left, you have the same problems that England has often.
Well, I mean, I don't want to go down this road, but like a lot of the reform vote comes from English people that have moved into Wales. See, I don't.
What's
We.
what's Brothers and Glendower doing recently? Aren't they not burning these people out like they used to? Get on
Oh,
it. Come on, Brothers and
come
Glendower.
on. To be honest, I think, oh man, like, so I've lived in England now for like a year and some, and it's just across the border, but I do kind of miss Wales a little bit, and I don't like there's a magic in Wales, and maybe it's just missing home a little bit, but
I think the land has a feel. I do think the land has a feel. I think we've touched on this before because you ever said when I'm in Derbyshire, I feel it's different.
it's
It's like a
different.
mile that way. It's like it's weird.
The
It's not
people
that
is.
this isn't Staffordshire soil.
It's not like it's not that people are better or worse, right? That's the key thing is, it's just that I've grown up
Feel.
around foresters. We're only down the road, so like I don't, you know, but like the people who are closest to me have a slightly different way of doing things that is comfortable and familiar. And I think everyone feels that a little bit about home, right?
For sure.
And I think
Well, everyone, some people do not like their homes for a variety of reasons.
no.
Broadly speaking,
And it, I'm talking like people who have generally had a fond home and a good upbringing, just sort of have they have that sort of that fondness for it. I mean, I can imagine it's the opposite for people that have had unhappy upbringings where they go back home and then they feel anxiety and dread and stuff, you
Definitely.
know?
I mean, yeah, I've known people like that for sure. It's an
Yeah,
unpleasant
so it's but
experience.
And it's so little things that I don't even think I could list. But just the
Don't think you can
small.
even. I think it's almost below conscious, even.
Yeah.
But yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to
No,
interrupt.
exactly. No. You got it. Yeah, like it does feel subconscious in a way where it's the little nuances, the manner, like the little social expectations or the ways in which we help each other are slightly different, and you know. And again, not better or worse than anywhere else, because I'm sure other people from other parts feel that, you know, the same. And a little bit of me wants to sort of get back into Welsh or do something more Welshy to just sort of connect. I don't know, but is that see, because I've always been consciously like generally an anti-nationalist. It's one of the reasons why I'm not fully in the Plaid camp is because I agree with a lot of their policies. I would happily support them in a lot of ways, but I just feel that when you have too much of an attachment to a national identity, I feel that it's not always good because it can be a little bit like leave you open to manipulation, like what reform do with the flag waving and the you know that kind of stuff. And it's like what they're doing, they're just using that jingoism and that nationalism to just like
I
manipulate
think
you, right?
it fundamentally comes down to whether you see, because we haven't all obvious we haven't always had countries. We haven't
No.
always had, countries are a very modern thing. So I think that framing of it as being about a political state is always the wrong framing. For me, it's about the land and the people on the land and the habits and but it stems from the land.
Because this isn't
fundamentally.
This isn't just a Welsh thing. It is the southeast. It's the particular bit of Wales I'm from as well.
Well, it's There's commonalities and So the first thing is whether you're identifying as your place, whether you're seeing that as a fixed, unchanging notion or something that has some fluidity to it, that can change and redefine itself over time, and also whether it's inclusive or exclusive. Fundamentally, I think if you, so long as you see this thing that you're identifying with as very slow changing, because we're talking about history, but somewhat fluid and inclusive, I don't think that's, I think that's a very different kind of nationalism than what we think of when we think of English nationalism or something like that. I think you can have an attachment to the practices, people, landscape, weather, all of those. I think you can have an attachment to those things and a kind of pride in it and belonging that isn't exclusive.
Yeah, I hope. I remember when the Queen died and we all went a bit nationalist doolally for a little bit, didn't we? Union Jacks everywhere.
We didn't, but
and it just felt a little bit, and I don't want to be hyperbolic here, but it felt a little North Korea-y, a little bit of.
I know what you mean. I don't think that's accurate. I think what that is to me is British identity is not real. There are commonalities between the British nations, of course. There are things we have in common, but there isn't a British identity. Nobody feels, give or take, nobody feels British. Because what is that? And I think things like when the Queen dies, that's an attempt to assert a British identity, and it feels hollow. It feels, the only thing that can refer to is the Empire. That's the only context in which the word Britain, rather than England, Wales, Scotland, whatever, except in a very shorthand to when you're talking about them collectively, it's the only in terms of being a cultural thing, the Empire is the only sense in which that makes sense. So whenever something like the Queen dies, it's an attempt to reclaim that identity that we don't have anymore. We are not the imperial power, and even when we were the imperial power, even then, Britain referred to the Empire as a whole and Britain's power. It didn't refer to a political or cultural identity. There's never been a cultural identity that is British. And I think that's a bit of a crisis for us, because we want to assert it, because we are the UK, we're unified, blah, 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 and we want to create a British identity, but where do you pull it from? It's not real.
So what you mean a little bit by that, because that was quite a encompassing sort of idea there, is, so take for example Brexit. No one was talking about Northern Ireland during the Brexit debate.
No.
So when we think of, should we say the United Kingdom, right? The identity around the United Kingdom, a lot of English people, or Welsh or Scottish, probably, I don't know, I feel like Northern Ireland seems to be excluded from a lot of this kind of culture in a lot of ways.
Nobody wants them. I mean, Ireland wants to have that area back, but
oh, that, I don't know, that didn't sound like a good thing you said.
What do you mean? What about?
You just said nobody wants them.
I Northern Irish people who believe they're part of Britain, I'm talking about those, the nationalists. I think even unionists, English unionists, I don't think they like them. They're a political convenience. I don't think they like them.
Is there
they don't culturally belong to anything.
So because you're a supporter of the reunification of Ireland, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not super read up on it, but it seems sensible to me. I would be totally happy to hear people's thoughts on that one. It's not a thing I have a strong opinion, because generally my default opinion is self-determination. Is that the word?
No, absolutely.
But it does seem to be a little bit odd that it's just, we've just got a little corner of Ireland there, that does feel like a remnant of the Empire, to be honest.
And I don't think it even does anything practical. It gives us a land border with the EU now, which, you know, could be construed as handy, but other than that, it doesn't do anything for us. It's not a useful thing for us to have. We're just depriving Ireland of something that would be a little bit useful to them and is virtually no use to us.
Yeah. We do seem to, I don't know, like, yeah. Why is it so hard for us to, like, get rid of the remnants of the empire? Why have we still got a whole bunch of junk in the British Museum that we could just give back to people?
Like, I'm not as on board with the idea of giving that stuff back as probably most people, honestly.
I'm a little bit like
everywhere. I mean, yes. All right. Okay. I'm going to qualify. We're getting off track on the British thing, but. So during the colonial period, colonial countries sent out, you know, archaeologists and explorers and grave robbers and whatnot, and we took artifacts and we put them in our museums.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not against giving them back, but I think in many cases this is easy for me to say because my country wasn't plundered by another country, but so long as it's in a museum somewhere, I kind of think nothing should be owned by any particular museum, and these things should always be, if they're interesting enough to warrant it, they should kind of be on tour around the world. I'm sort of backtracking as I'm saying. I was about to say something and I sort of pulled back, but I don't care that much fundamentally, as long as it's in a museum.
Okay, it's maybe a bit symbolic, but
I care more that it's in a museum that people can get into for free than it's it than not. That's what I care about.
I mean, I've never been to the British Museum. I don't know
it's,
if I'll
ever go. It's Is fucking it? Amazing. Yeah. And that's part of... I want that to be something somewhere. I would rather export the entire British Museum to Cairo than just piecemeal send things back and forth. It's an amazing place to go to.
Well, there we go. Heard it here.
I know that. I assume most people are not going to be with me on that.
If
I was in government, because Greece had been asking for the Elgin marbles, as we call them, they've been asking for them back for decades, I would be absolutely taken back. But we stole them off you, take them back. Any instance where somebody asked for something back that we stole, absolutely. It's just not something because you see the memes all that. It's not that big a fucking, there's more important.
It's symbolic
things.
Though.
I'd rather we stop bombing other countries and economically fucking intentionally fucking them so that we can have the standard of living that we do than we return these artifacts. It's a different scale of importance to me.
For sure, for sure, for sure. And whether or not I get rid of my YouTube channel,
I care about the arts and I care about history.
Is a different layer further. But,
far more important.
But, what it means to me is, like, the fact that it's so difficult to do this seems to indicate how hard it is to, like, let go of our idea of the empire. It just feels...
No, if you're talking about my response to it, it's not that. I think you know.
It feels to me like, why can't... Well, it's more like, why can't we just give them back? You know? Because it's
that's kind of where I am. I just don't care. No, I care. It's not true.
Why is it so
care.
Hard? That's the question. Why is it so hard? Why is it just something
I'd be quite happy to send the whole entire. I like the like museums are amazing, and museums that have lots of stuff that you can go to one place and see tons of stuff are a fucking amazing experience. I want to preserve that. Send it to Cairo. I mean, another component that I don't want to overstate this, but the Egypt of today, culturally in terms of the population, any way you want to cut it. Is not ancient Egypt. Okay, it's not the same people. It's not the same culture. There's no connection other than the place.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Greece. That is not a continuous culture that's existed for, you know, blah, 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 blah. They've been invaded, conquered, reconquered, massive population movements, you know. So it's not like we can give stuff back to ancient Greece because that doesn't exist anymore.
I mean, it is their history, though, isn't it?
It's not the same people, they're not the same culture, it's not the same anything. Why is it their history?
They're not,
in the same way that Stonehenge is not, in that sense, my history. That is a different people, a different culture, a different. It's, I think I'm really coming at this, and I know that it's easy to say this in what was the imperial core that stole everything, but to me, this stuff all belongs to humanity in general. And wanting ownership of it to belong to a modern nation state, which has virtually, in many cases, no connection with the, you know, the culture that made these things, is the other kind of nationalism that I don't like.
So it's on...
Again, not hardline that we shouldn't... It's not that I think we shouldn't return these things. It's that I think we think about it in an oversimple way. And the important thing to me is maximizing the number of people who can see these amazing fucking things.
So, okay. Declare the British Museum to be international waters. Then it's everybody's.
Yeah, I would love it to be like a touring thing. You couldn't tour the whole British Museum, but ideally I'd love it to just be a touring thing that goes around and, you know, yeah.
Do you ever wonder how much, like, secret art and treasures the Queen has, or not the Queen now, the King, the royal family, have never come to light? Like, do you think they've got, like, stores of, like, ancient jewels?
No, I think we're too bureaucratic for that. I'm sure it's all catalogued. We're too bureaucratic a culture and a country for that to be the case.
Yeah, but not the royal firm. Treasure. You know, not the royal...
No, I think even that, because that's where... But before we move on, in an ideal world, all museums and their contents would be owned, again, the global version of nationally, by, like, we would give them all to UNESCO or something.
Mm.
That's the right UN body, isn't it? UNESCO, to deal with, like, World Heritage stuff. They would all just be owned by UNESCO, and they get to decide where stuff goes and, you know, move it around, tour it. Like, that would be my dream scenario, rather than this belongs to this country, this belongs to that country. We're fucking human beings. It's all of our culture, in some sense, when it's really obvious.
Is it not a monument of imperialism, just having it all in the British Museum, though? Do you not think that?
Yeah, it is. It is a result of imperialism. So, that's why I say, give it to the world. Make it not that.
Yeah, I mean,
I do enjoy the memes though about, you know, it's the British.
Oh, I love the memes. Someone, you
know, they're funny.
Oh yeah.
And when what was the? Oh yeah, when the Queen's funeral.
Yeah.
And it was something like the Cairo Museum being like we're going to steal her coffin. I can't remember. It was something along those lines. It was funny.
There's the... Yeah, I want to try and find the... I want to try and find my favourite... Why can I not find my favourite meme? It's the one where the guys are putting it in the backpack. Was that not quite? Oh, because it's the one. Yeah. Oh, fuck it. It's just everyone's holiday photos of them holding up the Leaning Tower of Pisa. we're coming up to 3 o'clock in a bit when we've got a game planned.
Right, yeah. Okay.
So is there anything we want to wrap up? Also, do you know I've got the chat on the video down here at the bottom. Mm. Never use it when it's there.
No, when it's not there. Links all over the place. Yeah,
yeah. It's there just so I don't have to worry about the links. All the links are there, but well, whatever.
Yeah.
God, I don't know. I don't know what to do about my YouTube channel. Still, it's not gotten me any clearer.
Well, I'm going to top us off with a. I've got a little thing, and this might help you decide. So, okay. Earlier today, Wing posted this image.
Mm-hmm.
Mouse over it so it animates.
Okay. Yeah.
I find that image disturbingly sexual, and also appealingly sexual. That is borderline pornographic to me.
What? Why is that?
I don't know. It's purely. So it's the motion is very sexual, and those colours in the background feel very sexual to me. Also, again, maybe my brain is doing something with figs. Figs of for millennia being a symbol of female genitalia. Maybe there's something of that going in there. But yeah, I want a straw poll. Anybody with me on this?
Yeah. See, I like what have you? What do you think of the freebooters.uk website? Sorry, I
love it. Yeah, no, yeah, yeah.
Because I like that. Yeah. That to me is a project that I like. Is there? It's not. Hmm. You know, it's ticking over. You know,
and you're enjoying it because it's not just go to corporate silo, put text in, press. Submit and you created this yourself. It's something you're building yourself.
Well, we did. You did Plock as well.
Yeah. You know what I mean though. It's not just a content platform. It's not just a form that you fill in. It's something that you're making and guiding and
yeah.
And I think there's enormous value in that, and people need to return for that. Yeah. YouTube question.
God, I wish I knew.
I would lean towards make private and see how it feels. But the fact that it's a sort of half step, I think, is going to frustrate you.
Do you still have your YouTube channel, don't you?
Yeah. But I don't do anything, but yeah, it exists.
Yeah. See, the thing is, it's like, I mean, I like, there is a certain type of video I like making for PeerTube, right? The chill, play a game and then chat about shit video. I love making those little videos. But doing them for PeerTube seems to be part of the overall charm for it. So if I just posted mirrored it to YouTube, I don't know. I feel like it loses the magic on that a little bit.
And also, I think that detracts from it being on YouTube, on PeerTube a little bit.
Yes.
That's not rational. That's emotional, but I think it does. Yeah, for you and in general.
Well, the thing is, right? If PeerTube, let's say PeerTube takes off, and because the thing is, I don't care if PeerTube becomes wildly successful and mainstream tomorrow or not. Like, as it is now, I'm fine with it, right? But the thing is, it's like, what is being gained by having a version on PeerTube and a version on YouTube? What am I doing for the PeerTube environment if I'm just making a copy?
Yeah, no, I agree. I
Even
agree.
if that copy is like focused around PeerTube, it just feels like,
I think we need to wait. I think we're going to go around in circles on this, but I do think you I think given what I'm not telling you what to do, but my read on what you're telling me is I think you need to work yourself towards a place where you feel comfortable deleting it. That seems to be what you want to do to me.
Yeah, and maybe I'm not there yet, but I got to work myself towards that place. Interesting. Okay, but I just want to put a few things down for the record. I don't think this is particularly about views, otherwise I'd be chasing them a bit more.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think this is about, I don't think YouTube are doing me dirty like some content creators do, right? Like, I think it's just my relationship with YouTube is not necessarily what YouTube wants to do right now, and that's probably for the best because, I'm not a mainstream kind of thing. It's not really about views insofar that I get the views I want from PeerTube. Like, I don't want to make stuff that no one wants to watch. But at the same time, I like a few people watch, like it's like,
Yeah, no, it's one of those situations where you always feel like you have to sort of explain yourself. Like, we're not chasing numbers, but at the same time, you want people to watch and you want numbers in a way,
Small
but in a
numbers,
different way.
I don't want to
But
be
it's nice.
so, I want to make
Yeah,
videos for
it's.
my friends is maybe not the wrong word, but like I want to make videos for the community, not necessarily, not that everyone, but
It's a natural human impulse when you make something to want it to be popular, right? It's in some way that is just a natural human thing, and they've taken that and turned it into something horrible and toxic, like that only. That's the only thing that matters. That's the problem with that. It's not. There's nothing wrong with wanting a high number of people to watch your thing. There's nothing wrong with that. The problem is what they've done with that. I'm not expressing that well, but do you
No,
know what I mean? It's the
they've
corporate version of that is the problem, not that impulse in itself.
yeah. And also one of the things I do like, just to reiterate an older point, Owncast, I really like. It requires minimal resources, a very simple piece of software that's very easy to install, set up, and it doesn't keep things around all the time, and that's good.
It's a joy to install, and it's a joy to use. It's an amazing project.
Yeah. And I think, do you know
Whoever wants
what?
to make that.
Maybe, yeah. But that's what I kind of, maybe that's where I should be focusing my effort. There's places that I want that maybe I should throw myself into rather than.
I mean, I do. I just to add weight to, I think you should delete YouTube. Again, not telling you what to do. This blah blah blah. Is it doesn't it? Nothing about YouTube seems to bring you any satisfaction in any way at all. Even when you're putting stuff on there, and like it doesn't seem to bring you anything positive.
Shit, you're totally right about that. I'd never even fucking thought of that.
Other than a connection to what it has been and the journey and the body of work, those kind of things, the past. In the present, it doesn't seem to bring you anything positive, and it's a chore, and it's a weight on your mind, and it's a source of stress. Yeah.
Yeah. Shit, I think that's, yeah. I think you're right. I think I just don't like it anymore and I want it to go away.
That's what it seems like.
It does. And it just feels like it's just hard to pull myself away. Maybe I will, I don't know. I mean, do you know what I think I'm gonna do? I think I'm gonna put this video up on YouTube. Because we recorded it now and I'll put it on PeerTube as well. And I'll be interested to hear the comments. If there are any.
Yeah,
People don't leave
leave
comments on
comments
YouTube
open on YouTube.
anymore.
Yeah, I mean, leave comments open on YouTube and see what people on PeerTube say, because what your audience says is a factor that should be considered,
Yeah,
and
definitely.
both audiences say. And I am honestly, I imagine even on YouTube, I imagine they're going to agree with you, I think.
Yeah.
But I think so.
Or some of them will be like, oh, just put whatever videos up. Like, again, I don't care about appeasing the algorithm anymore. I'm happy to put any old shit, but then it comes, if it's any old shit, why do I want to be putting it up there at all? Like,
Especially when it's bringing
exactly.
positivity.
Yeah. I think we're a bit closer. Yes. Good therapy
Anyway,
session,
let's
doctor.
probably
All right. Anyway, thank you for joining us. Sorry about me going on about this. It's just something that's big on my mind. I don't, and it's something that I'm having trouble walking away from, but I think I'm getting there.
Yeah, I think
All
yeah, I
right.
think you are. I think
Okay.
it's a slow process, and that's fine.
Yeah. All right. Toodaloo, everyone at home.